fly like birds on high. Then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond a star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. Ah. My heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet, I know we'll meet beyond the shore. We'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sail. So long sailing, bye-bye sailing, move on our captain, so long sailing.
WHFR Dearborn.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Thank you, Alex, for sitting in for Bill Wright today on the Big Band Show. This is WHFR Dearborn, by the way, and it was great having that that little bit of hot jazz, jump, big band music I heard in the last half hour, and also a little bit of the Calypso stuff, so thank you for sitting in. It's always a collective effort here. And, of course, you know what you found. You have found the new WHFR Journal, and we are all about local news and views. And my name is Jay Koronek. And as Chevy Chase used to say on Saturday Night Live, yours isn't. And I'm here with my co-host, Ned Apigian, who, as soon as the mic test is to actually see if we can hear it, Ned. So,
you don't hear me.
Good morning, Ned. So,
yeah, afternoon,
yes, it's afternoon. Well, it depends on what time you get up, but tell us what you've been doing this week.
Me, not much.
Uh huh.
Other than the normal struggles.
Uh-oh. Well, I've gone to the farmer's market.
Oh, you went.
Yeah, that's the new enterprise of the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce between the West Dearborn parking structures that are basically unused. It's a small area, actually, in between those two towers, but really good selection today. Boy, I found some really fresh homemade bread, and I found one of the vendors is officially certified organic, too. I think she's from Brownstown, so it's not too far away from here. And then some really, really fresh things that were no more expensive than what I would find at the big grocery stores. And of course, Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. was out there himself. Looks like he was on his way to some important meetings because he was all dressed up in his business-type suit. But he was out there greeting people. My daughter's the one that dragged me over there. Said, it's really, really good, and I'll pick you up, and we'll bring the grandkid, and we'll all go over there. And so it was a fun hour of looking around at stuff. She said that in the last couple of weeks, because she goes every week, that they've actually had a greater variety of items, too. Like she said, the first week there was three vendors out of, I guess, about 15 was what I might have counted there. Some of them have a couple of tables. Yeah, 15, 18 maybe. Three of the vendors in the first week, for example, all had honey. Well, that's a problem. You know, it's because you're competing against one another. And so I don't know if they're comparing notes from week to week among the vendors. Say, well, next week you bring the tomatoes, I'll bring the squash, you know, or whatever, so that they're not in direct competition. It looked very fresh. I'm really interested. I got a melon that was grown here in Michigan. Imagine a melon grown in Michigan. And a huge pint of blueberries, which was, again, no more expensive than the regular store. So it was kind of fun, and afterwards we went and had a chai tea at one of the little restaurants there, which is what those West Dearborn restaurants are hoping for, is that after your shopping experience, you'll go and maybe have a little food or do a little shopping and improve their business. And if you do park in the towers on Friday, it's $1 all day. Okay, although my daughter just put 4 quarters in the meter, and we didn't need more than an hour to finish it off. But a fun time was had by all, by golly, and certainly by me. And so I enjoyed it, and I'm going to go back next week too, and just make sure that I buy my fresh vegetables and fruits there. So
we've been promoting it now for at least 2 or 3 weeks in a row.
Well, it's about time that I made it over there too, but I mean, we're just guessing.
Well, you can't make it after the show. It's closed at 2.
That's right. It does close at 2. From 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., folks, in West Dearborn, just south of Michigan Avenue, off a little bit west of Military there, a block or two west of Military, and it's right in between the two visible, I think they're about four-story, maybe three-story parking towers.
And four is more like it.
Yeah, it's a four-story. And as we said, on Fridays from 9 a.m. on, it's $1 for the whole day. So if you wanted to make a whole day out of it and keep your car in the nice, cool parking structure there, you certainly could do that. Well, what did you find in this week's newspapers?
Well, the important thing is election week.
Well,
we need to talk about the results.
Oh, absolutely. So
a couple interesting things.
You think? Okay, go ahead.
Well, the most interesting, and I don't have all the details, but I went over to the city hall. I thought the local newspapers that publish on Wednesday, unfortunately, don't have the results.
No, the Dearborn Press and Guide's website, which is pressandguide.com, does have the numbers for
anything?
Dearborn.
Oh, good.
Well, there was nothing of very interesting to me. As you'll probably mention, Representative Dillon in Dearborn Heights area did win in the Democratic primary. Now, of course, he was the incumbent, the name recognition, but there was a chance that because of the recall, there might have been some disgruntled Democrats or some people, Republicans, crossing over to vote against him. That didn't happen. He's still, of course, with, I think,
I don't know what the percentage is.
Three or four people.
Well,
yeah,
not.
With three or four people also in his Democratic primary, anyone who was crossing over to vote against him, there would have to be an awful lot of votes there because all he needed was the plurality out of those four or five.
Because there were at least three candidates, as I remember.
Yeah. So if there was any protest vote, maybe it totaled more than his votes. But we, you know, it doesn't matter. He's going to go back to be the Democratic candidate. And if you didn't want him to return, of course, you could vote Republican or some other party, because there'll probably be a Libertarian and or a Green Party, and maybe some other party candidates will be on the November ballot. And of course, there were no other party races, because this was the primary to narrow down the field. And those other parties they already have their people chosen. So
I don't think they were on the ballot, as I remember seeing my ballot.
They wouldn't be, because there was no need. You know, they already had just one candidate they've chosen among themselves, and there doesn't need to be a primary for those other parties.
I think one election that doesn't involve individuals was that the zoo proposal won in all three counties.
Yes, and that's important to mention, although I think the word probably went around on the major media. That was the only issue that was clearly on this area. I don't know if there was any other a smaller ballot proposal on one of the other local
communities. Well, we have some percentages here if you think it's interesting.
If you think it is.
Yeah. The Detroit Zoo officials voiced cautious optimism late Tuesday as early as election returns showed a proposed regional tax to fund the zoo appeared to be winning overwhelmingly in all three counties.
Well, overwhelming, yes. Yeah.
With 75% of the precincts reporting, Wayne County voters were approving the measure by 76%. With 73% of Oakland County precincts reporting, the measure was winning by 77%. Mm-hmm. Macomb County, where 63% of the precincts were reporting the tax, the total was 69%. So it seemed to be pretty consistent throughout the three counties. So the percentages voting were turning in. So that's good
not
news.
Not a major bit of dispute there. Again, since the suburbs are actually...
It is hard times.
Hard times, but suburbs know that it's good for the kids to have that resource. It's a day at the zoo, something for them to do, but... I feel that as long as we have such a fine zoo, and because the suburbs are the ones that are using it more than Detroit residents, just by sheer numbers, too. I don't know the percentages of each from each city or whatever, but we should all share in the maintenance and the improvement of that, and this is about the only way to do it.
Here's what the director said.
And by the way, this is not... Folks, just so you know, this is not totally paying for the zoo's cost. It only pays for about 30%. They still have to have private foundation grants and corporate grants, and they may still be asking for fundraisers and volunteers. And so that's fine, folks. I mean, we're not totally underwriting everything, and they're getting a free ride. They're going to have to continue proving to us that they're doing a great job in order to get our extra donations, too, for those of us that really like the facility and want to help them. So I think that's only appropriate for people that were saying, well, we don't want any more government enforced taxes on everybody. This is not the free ride for everybody at the zoo to do whatever they want to. We've only guaranteed, and it's a nice thing to have a guarantee floor, you might say.
A reasonable percentage.
Yeah, and in this case, it's only 30% of their operating budget. Sort of like WHFR. We're a separate entity within Henry Ford Community College. We get a base of about 20% from the college each year that we can pretty much count on because it comes from student fees, and we get the same amount every year. Doesn't even get it adjusted for inflation, and then we have to make our appeal to the community, to businesses, and to individuals during our pledge drive and other times.
Which is only once a year.
Once a year over the air, anyway, right? Although they can donate any time at our website if the need.
Some promote twice a year.
Yeah, and but we're not going to pitch that. We're just saying is that we have to make our case for the rest of the budget, the majority of the budget each year, and people do respond. I'm sure they will respond to the needs of the zoo, but at least they have that very, very important, secure funding base that they can count on, and they couldn't live on it alone, but still it's a guarantee that the zoo will be able to be there, and the rest of the money they'll have to make the argument for, and that means they have to prove they're doing a good job for the animals and for the community both. So I'm sure that'll happen. Yeah, that's
well, the other major election, which is really outside of Dearborn or Dearborn Heights, was the election involving the mayor of Detroit's Kwame Kilpatrick's mother.
Mm-hmm.
That was a key, probably national race that people were interested in. She was Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick is apparently the winner,
mm-hmm.
but she was opposed by Mary Waters, who was a former state representative whom I had met in my travels as being in elections.
Oh, boy.
And that's extremely interesting as to how close that race was, and Mrs. Kilpatrick squeaked it out.
Right, but as I said, she only won the plurality. This is as I was referring to I thought was true with Dylan. Her two challengers actually got more votes than she did. But she got more votes than either one of them alone.
Yeah, I wanted to read the article.
Okay.
Just the short part, which is really important, because this is national significance to this region. And I don't guess her son helped her any, but here's how it goes. It says, Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick, the mother of embattled Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, was locked in a tight race Tuesday night to hold the seat she has won in 1996. With 70% of the precincts reporting, former state rep Mary Waters and Kilpatrick were in a dead heat, with each having about 38% of the vote, and Democratic primary state senator Martha Scott trailed with 25%.
Right.
The Congresswoman's campaign produced a brochure hard-lined out, handed out at polling places Tuesday, and of course she's alleging the sins of her son are not relative. But the important thing is, as Jay mentioned, the protest vote, when it's divided, tends not to work too efficiently.
Yeah, it really is not going to be successful. I mean, if people did not want to return to office, now the choice comes in November, Democrat or Republican, or maybe Libertarian or Green Party member that might be on the ballot, but people are always leery about those third-party people. But they will have to choose a different kind of political party endorsement, too, in order to oppose her. And so the petition drive route is not a bad approach, actually, folks, even though that's difficult, too, to get someone out of office. That is more effective, as you can see here. Let's say that her two challengers were getting a protest vote. Both of them together got more votes than she did. But in fact, she, because she had more votes than either one individually opposing her, is the one returning as the Democratic name for the November election race. And so anyone protesting her returning to represent them in Congress
have to vote Republican.
Have to vote Republican or Libertarian or Green Party. But of course, Libertarian and Green Party votes may not total up to be more than the Democratic vote, which is always very high in the Detroit area.
We're talking about the city of Detroit.
City of Detroit, primarily, yeah. So,
we'll
see what happens there. And now with the latest, which we don't really have to comment on, I hadn't heard this morning, is the mayor out of jail yet? Did you hear?
On television today, if those of you who, I tend to keep the C-SPAN 20, the congressional coverage, as background. I don't sit and watch it as to what I'm doing.
Well, I'm sure that
they had the whole trial live. The hearing was live.
No kidding.
I didn't think it would last as long, but the judge was hearing comments from attorneys, and I don't know how it turned out.
You can turn to your commercial media. It'll be the top story tonight.
Absolutely.
It's a little late for I'm sure the midtime lunchtime news on 247 TV were into it heavily. But it is unfortunate for the city. And now even
Actually, what the judge said, he was surprised when he came in the courtroom. The place was full of photographers and news people, and he was wondering what was going on that was so interesting.
I guess he slept in late this morning. He didn't realize the coverage.
I don't know. He might have been taking somebody's place unannounced, I think.
In terms of elections, I'd like to switch to the November election, because this week I don't know if you have Wednesday Press and Guide in front of you.
No.
You don't?
I got it.
Well, they usually have a Democrat versus Republican editorials on the single issue. And they set this up at the Dearborn Press and Guide, and usually they're on different sides of whatever the question is that is raised, of course. You know, Democrats and Republicans don't usually agree. Oh, my gosh, these two local, well-known people, John Conley, who is a Dearborn Heights resident. He's the chairman of the Dearborn Heights Republican Club.
Oh.
And his opinion is expressed here versus Morris Goodman's. And he's a Dearborn resident, and he's a Dearborn attorney, as well as president of the Dearborn Democratic Club. So they're both the leaders of their two parties in this area. And the issue that's coming up on the November ballot proposal, well, it says it might be on the November 4th ballot, depending on the result of court challenges. There's a couple of court. It has been passed by our Michigan legislature.
What's the issue?
The reform government now proposal.
Ah.
Yeah, okay. And what those court challenges are, if I understand correctly, first of all, it does propose, it's something like, listen to Morris Goodman's response here, which I'll just read part of, because the court challenge has to do with how complicated this ballot proposal is. And supposedly, according to Michigan's constitution, if you're going to have a ballot petition, it cannot be complicated. Okay, it should be something that is fairly clear, not only clearly expressed, but not having too many different bits and pieces to it.
Okay. I've never seen one that was clear. You're supposed to say yes when you mean no. Well, what is that?
There's
all
that,
about?
But what if you like 28 out of 30 of the parts of it? Well, you're going to get two parts. Now, this often is the dilemma for our legislators, both in the state of Michigan and in Washington, D.C. They have these, what I might call, omnibus bills that have all kinds of bits and pieces tossed in, including the pork barrel local district little extra projects.
You're talking about normal legislation.
Normal legislation in Lansing and in Washington, D.C. And so our representatives have always a tough choice. When the final vote comes, do they vote for, because they like most of it, but there's a couple things they hate? And they vote against most of it because of those things.
The president can veto a thing based on one thing in there that he doesn't like.
Yeah, the president of the United States does have a pocket veto. Do they have pocket vetoes?
Yes. I mean, he doesn't have to do anything.
He can turn the whole thing down or not even vote. But here's Morris Goodman's view. So if this gets to the November ballot, again, the legal challenge, as I understand it, is that there's just too many darn things wrapped together. Now, where did this proposal come from? Mostly some people who were Democrats, and it looks like it's favoring the Democratic Party folks. They're asking for a number of judgeships to be eliminated in the state of Michigan, and it turns out that some of those were Republican appointees or Republican elected people, because it is a partisan judgeship in Michigan, even at the Supreme Court level. And but it changes, and I was in favor of this part, it changes the drawing of district lines.
Well, that's the most important
thing. The gerrymandering, as it's called.
The whole gerrymandering is the most important thing.
To make it more fair. Now, so I was in favor of that part, but here's Morris Goodman.
What do they think is fair?
Well, right, exactly. But here's Morris Goodman, a Democrat, saying he doesn't think this proposal, you should vote yes on it if it gets the ballot. And it mainly came from a significant number of Democrats.
And what does the Republican say? He's
well,
for
of course,
it.
He's against it because it's designed to help the Democrats.
Oh, I see.
So let's just read Goodman's proposal here to our listeners. Morris Goodman says, there are two different and equally important aspects to the Reform Michigan Government Now ballot proposal to change Michigan's constitution. The first is the intent of the proposal to significantly change the way Michigan government is structured by reducing the size of the House and Senate, reducing the size of the Supreme Court, reducing the salaries of state elected officials and judges, and changing the way election districts are drawn, the gerrymandering we've just mentioned, and elections themselves are conducted. Most of the proposed changes I enthusiastically support, says Mr. Goodman. Unfortunately, regardless of how I feel about the changes proposed, the second aspect that must be considered before endorsing the proposal is the process being used to effectuate, there's a big word, effectuate, to bring into effect the proposed changes. He says, I simply do not think a complicated ballot proposal should be the method used to materially change Michigan's constitution. Now, I mentioned last week or the week before that I'd read somewhere is that 2010, just 2,000 years away, that's when our Michigan...
2 years away.
2 years away. What did I say? 2,000 years?
Yes.
Away? Okay. 2 years. It seems like 2,000 maybe for those that want change. Just 2 years away is when officially the people of Michigan will be asked, do you want to have a constitutional convention?
Well, that seems appropriate.
Which would officially reform and look at all these issues. Now, my only negative point that I mentioned on my show last week is, who's going to be elected to this constitutional convention? That's right. the legislature is going to be in control of it. So if there's a majority of Democrats in the House, then they'll get the majority probably on the constitutional review committee, if you will. And so that won't be totally fair either, but at least it will be a time and a place to look at everything, including term limits, and make some new decisions, and then propose it a year or two later.
Do you know when the last time the Constitution was revised?
I'll
tell you what I remember.
It can be considered every 10 years, and I don't think 10 years ago the voters said we needed it.
Well, as I remember, in the early 60s, they had a constitutional convention.
Yes. I think that was for the new Constitution.
Right.
Actually, that was a major change.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Now, since then, I don't recall, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen. I didn't know that every 10 years it was a requirement to review it.
Well, in
Dearborn, what are they proposing here? A major revision like was done 45 years ago?
Well, okay. The ballot proposal, I'll continue with Morris Goodman. He says that this proposal makes changes to nearly 30 separate sections of Michigan's Constitution. So that's probably more than a constitutional revision would actually bring about, because they're usually quite conservative in their reforms.
Constitutions are supposed to be brief, so 37 sections might be half.
Yeah, well, it's quite a lot of the important ones. He says, the way that these important issues are presented, the voter either votes yes or no on the entire nearly 30 proposed changes, because you don't have you can't pick or choose on the ballot proposal. You're either for this proposal if it's on the ballot or against it. Okay.
But you raised the question about delegates to the convention, which is important.
Yeah.
There's a very easy way to solve that problem if people just want to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Every county has so many representatives to the county, the state election, and it's based on the population of a county. So one county with 50 people in it doesn't have five delegates.
I don't think they should be elected on a partisan basis either.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Right. Well, that's what, because you're just going to have status quo Republicans and status quo Democrats who are already in office want to keep the status quo, that they will be anti any kind of reforms, no matter how logical they are, because it might endanger the status quo that people are aware of,
We just had it in Dearborn, if you remember, last year. You have an election, you determine who the delegates are.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take the politics out of that, but you can determine fairly how many, if Wayne County has 20% of the population of the state of Michigan, it should have 20% of the delegates, however those delegates are divided.
Right.
But there's 82 counties in Michigan.
For Dearborn, it was a slate across the whole city.
I don't know how they did it.
Not individual precincts, but that was still fair because Dearborn is only 100,000 people. And there were, though, it was quite obvious, there was a slate of candidates who did represent the status quo.
Exactly.
And a slate of candidates who are more reform. And the status quo candidates who had more recognizable names like former councilmen and so on, they got the majority.
Same thing is going to happen here. You can't take politics out of it, but you can make it so that, the problem with the federal constitution is when we came up with the senator, we have states that send two senators to Congress that have more animals in their states than they have people.
Right.
So, I mean, you have to come up with some fair solution. But anyway.
As Goodman continues, of course, he thinks that, and again, the legislature didn't really debate reform government now when they voted for the proposal. It was all done by a group of mostly Democrats in a private session, and there was no discussion. It just came back fait accompli, in other words, one package, and the Democratic majority was able to get it passed. And that's it. And so that's why it's on the ballot. Did it have anything to do with, as I was hoping, tax reform? No. The fair tax people were totally closed out. So these are things that are not too radical, but they do give the Dems, does reduce the size of people in government, which means, there won't be as many salaries to pay. The gerrymandering issue is going to be nicely made fair in the future.
Depends on how they do it.
But therefore, the Republicans are going to lose some seats. Okay, because, for example, the districts like Dearborn are going to pretty much be able to vote as one district instead of being separated. So the cities, whoever lives in that city, are going to have a representative who is more beholden to that city than five cities. Okay, right now some of our precincts are actually overlap Dearborn a little bit, Detroit most. I mean, if most of your district is Detroit, how much do they care about Dearborn? Only a little bit, I'm sorry to say. But that's just the practical matter. That's the way it's worked out.
If you asked a person what its state representative district is, they couldn't tell you because their overlaps are ridiculous.
They're confused. So this will.
If you go into congressional, it's the same thing.
Right. So
two congressmen in the city of Dearborn Heights.
When the Republicans were in majority in the Michigan House and Senate, they came up with this gerrymandering plan that was patently unfair for all the population of the state just because they wanted to carefully choose where Republicans live so that they get a majority. It was so unfair. Dearborn remained mostly intact, but even Gary Warrenchuk, who was then our representative and a Republican, voted against it. Good for him. Of course, he's now turned Democrat, and he got reelected.
He wants a nice county job.
Commissioner, which is not term limited. See, he can be county commissioner
forever.
Well, as long as he gets reelected. That's right.
We'll discuss who won that in our locally.
Well, he won as a Democrat. There was no competition
here in in the Dearborn Heights race. There was
some challengers.
There were challengers. Okay. We'll talk about that later.
Well, maybe you can answer.
I could tell you who won now. It was a
okay.
Good
well, maybe you can answer this. You know, on the primary ballot, I didn't see it indicated who the incumbents were. Did you see any indication of incumbents? Or have they stopped doing that now in the state of Michigan?
Well, first of all, there were no incumbents in the Dearborn Heights, Garden City, and Redford race.
But Gary Warrenchuk was incumbent for county commissioner, and it didn't list his name as incumbent.
Okay, well, you voted in Dearborn.
Democratic, this time.
Was there a challenger to him?
No, there wasn't. But in other places, like the judgeships and that, the nonpartisan races, who was the incumbent. No.
They always tell you who the incumbent is in judges.
Did not on this ballot. So,
well, in Warrenchuk's case, he was unopposed.
Right, of course.
So it didn't matter. He won the... for those of you in Dearborn Heights, the Dearborn Heights County Commission race is all of Redford, all of Dearborn Heights, and Garden City. Mm-hmm. Garden City had a person by the name of Diane Webb, and Redford, the township supervisor of Redford, they put up his father, who was Roger Handy, used to have a shoe store on Michigan Avenue in Schaefer, Cancellation Shoes, if you remember that, over there just east of Schaefer, nice man. Uh-huh. I used to buy shoes from him. And Janet Badalow, who is the councilwoman of Dearborn Heights.
Yes.
And the winner was Ms. Webb. And
really?
Yes.
So Janet Badalow?
Lost again.
Really?
Now, Janet's been running, been on the council and ran for state senator 2 years ago and lost. And now she put her hat in the ring for county commissioner because that's a serious job. It pays about $80,000.
Yeah, and as I said, it's not term limited. So once you get elected and get some name recognition,
the council
you should
job
be able to
pays
stick there. Yeah.
$8,000. It's not a
okay. So Webb
will continue
as a Democrat or a Republican?
No. These are Democrats.
The
Republicans. I don't even think had a candidate in the race.
Oh, probably not. Yeah.
But the most important part about that is that Phil Cavanaugh, who was the county commissioner, decided to run for county treasurer because that job pays about $140,000, and an $80,000 job wasn't enough for him. And guess what happened? Mr. Wojtowicz beat him. So now he has to go out and earn a living like a normal person.
Well, I saw, I don't know, was it negative campaigning on the part of Wojtowicz, but...
There was.
Whoa, this Kavanaugh was really raked over the coals, yeah.
He didn't pay his taxes one year there. You saw that?
Oh, yeah, and the comments he made that they quoted, and of course, you know, you can quote something out of context.
How did you run across that since you don't vote there?
I don't know. Was it on television? There might have been TV spots running on cable, you know, in the area that I saw. They might have taken out some TV time.
As I remember, Kavanaugh
did really
something.
Raked this Kavanaugh over the coals.
Took a nasty pick. You don't usually in local elections see things like that. You usually talk about yourself. You don't talk so much. But apparently Mr. Kavanaugh made fun of his name and that he was an elderly gentleman collecting Social Security. Because Wytovich has got to be 80 years old if he's a day.
Okay.
And when you're over 65, you collect Social Security. Doesn't make any difference if you have a job that pays $140,000.
Oh, I see. Yes.
So he was making a point of that. But I think Phil Kavanaugh took a gigantic gamble and lost. The total was 31,180 votes for Kavanaugh in Wayne County. And Wytovich got 48,900, so 49,000 versus 31. The old guy keeps his check.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think we've covered the election situation for the time being. We did have a lot of fun at homecoming, and thank you for being with me last week, Ned. Of course,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
We interviewed Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. and also the two candidates for 19th District judgeship, who they weren't involved in the primary election, but they'll come head to head as two nonpartisan candidates in November.
Yeah, how did
it's,
that turn out?
Judge
Is
Summers.
There, there are the only two names that's going to be on, or what?
Right, there's no one else that took out. You know,
so we're going to select one
the
out
petition
of two
to be on the ballot, right?
And
so they didn't have to be in the primary since there was only one person to challenge the incumbent, and it was Candace Abbott is the challenger, and the incumbent is Judge Mark Summers, and or Summer. Gee, I'm sorry, Judge, I just saw you recently again too, but we had nice discussion with both of them. And why would anyone challenge the incumbent judge? Well, because number one, there were issues about propriety, about the way they're doing running their office. There's a couple of lawsuits, civil suits, that have been taken out against Judge Summers, which I believe will not be adjudicated before November. So,
and also may be frivolous.
Well, right. In fact, part of the charges have already been tossed out in a preliminary hearing, as we mentioned last Friday, just to be fair to Judge Summers.
Right.
And so just a few remaining issues are to be worked out in the official courtroom setting. And, you know, it is a sort of the call of the judge at the time to see how that's going to work out. There's not a smoking gun here that I can see, and but Candace Abbott obviously felt that with a little bit of controversy there, that maybe she has an opening to become a judge, and maybe some of the people that don't, you know, who didn't elect Judge Summers the last couple of times actually are in favor of, you know, finding another candidate themselves, because he had a very difficult challenge to a judge who was our former Republican legislator, whose name escapes me now, who got involved in some terribly messy court actions.
Runco,
okay, thank you. It was Runco, and that became one of the dirtiest campaigns, although I'd say Runco started it, throwing mud, and then Summers had to respond, and Summers did effectively win. But Runco had quite a few issues that were raised against him and the way that he was a judge. Unfortunately, even his wife and her a former occupation of hers years before was brought up, and it, you know, really unfair stuff on all sides. But, you know, when there's negative campaigning against you as a candidate, you can't turn your cheek, I'm afraid. You've got to sling mud back at the other one, or it just won't, you know, they win. Unfortunately, people, voters, are very swayed by negative campaigning. We should fight against that. We should resist it. But if a charge is thrown at you as a candidate that is sort of dirty pool or unfair or exaggeration, if you don't respond in kind, I don't know, I guess the voters think you're wimpy or you're admitting that you're guilty or something. So that is very unfortunate. But Summers did have to sling some mud back at Runco, and and people ultimately felt that he was the better candidate. And now perhaps some, I don't know, disgruntled Runco supporters are, you know, they've got another candidate anyway. So take your pick there, Abbott or Summers for the November election. Just two things here. Let me Let me just run some this one important spot, because it's all pre-recorded and Ned is all choked up for a second here. You get a chance to listen to this for 50 seconds. Very important.
PSA.
Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer. A credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Henry Ford Community College fall semester classes begin Thursday, August 21st. Be sure to call 1-800-585-HFCC for registration information, or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.
So we're back here on the new WHFR Journal. Yes, hard to believe, but only 13 days to go from today, and the fall semester here at Henry Ford Community College begins August 21st. That's right. I know that the kids in K-12 can wait till after Labor Day, but college, there's a lot to learn here, folks. You got to get started early. And I guess that's the excuse anyway. And
we need the money earlier. Yeah,
well, the state of Michigan does demand that... you know, our classes have so many hours in them, so many days, and so our semester doesn't end at the end of January. It ends before Christmas, as and almost all colleges do start before Labor Day. So just so you remember, if you want classes to complete a degree, Associate of Arts or Associate of Science degree here, or some other certificate program, or job retraining, or just personal enrichment, our fall semester classes that are normally like Thursday only, or Tuesday-Thursday classes, or include Thursday as a meeting time, they start on Thursday, August the 21st, and there's enrollment is going strong right now, and today there is one counselor only here. This is the last Friday that Henry Ford Community College is on its spring-summer semester schedule. So next week, both Friday and I believe Saturday morning, there'll be counselors here if you need some in-person help directly. You can come by on Friday, but today, Friday, there's only one, unfortunately, overloaded counselor, and the cars are piled up in the lot out there, who's in the front building here, just sort of an emergency, but they're doing the best they can. Otherwise, you can enroll online at hfcc.edu. If you need to be admitted, you have to come here in person to the college to be admitted with your documents and so on. But
you can do that on Friday?
Next Friday.
Oh.
Yeah. Or next Monday, anyway, when they get back into full session, or a week from tomorrow, a week from Saturday too. So we wanted to share that with you. Here's a story that you might want to look at in the Press and Guide from Wednesday, August 6th. It comes from some press service in, it says Dearborn, Lansing. There's no name on it, but a study links Michigan to sweatshops. Now, elected officials, religious leaders, human rights groups, students, and labor unions are calling on Governor Granholm to end tax dollar support for sweatshops. And here's the study. Here's a story. I'll just give it to you briefly. The study is entitled Subsidizing Sweatshops, How Our Tax Dollars Fund the Race to the Bottom and What Cities and States Can Do. It includes in-depth case studies of 12 factories in 9 countries that produce public employee uniforms for 9 major uniform brands. And it's only that issue of uniforms. At least 3 of these brands supply the state of Michigan. So people that wear uniforms in the state of Michigan comes from some of these people who are problematic. So the group, people, coalition of human rights and religious groups, elected officials, businesses, labor unions, and student groups launched this campaign called the Sweat Free Michigan Campaign, calling on Governor Granholm to join it to end our paying for unfair and underpaid conditions from factories outside this country that the state of Michigan is, in fact, by buying products from these companies, is supporting. So it's a complicated issue. It does talk about, you know, international trade and so on, the consequences of this. There's no particular companies that are mentioned here that I see as I'm scanning this article, but it's on page 7A of Press and Guide this week, and it is something they do have. I think it's probably sweatfreeconsortium.com or something. I'm sure there'll be a website that you can get more information on that. So it's something that there's not a lot of detail there, but if we have a choice in what we buy, and most of us do, it's good to know where we can support the more appropriate directions.
Here's some interesting economic news that goes in conjunction with what you're talking about, which is good news. GM says the Volt will hit Europe in 2011. Well, I thought we had the problem here. Why is it going to Europe, the Volt? It should be coming to America. This is in the Free Press. Yeah. And the other thing...
Well, it's just a year after it's supposedly available here.
Oh,
right.
Well...
However, I have...
I'm waiting for here.
The interesting news is that the batteries that they're going to be putting in there, lithium-ion batteries, I understand, at this point, it's still 2 years to go, are being made in China. Made in China. Because a Chinese battery maker of lithium-ion batteries, that worker gets, on average, $160 a week, okay, to make these high-tech batteries. And in the United States, we do have a few companies making lithium-ion batteries here. The worker gets over $2,000 a week. That's their salary. So you can see why lithium-ion batteries, we'd rather buy them from a foreign country like China. Because now the question is, how is that worker mistreated or underpaid in China? In other words, if $160 gets him a fantastic living
probably
for his whole
family.
Probably
a lot of money in China.
Right. It's just outside one of, I think, the second largest city in China. And the article concluded that $160 a week, I mean, it's much lower, one-tenth, more than one-tenth as much as a U.S. worker would make making the same kind of batteries. But there, it is a very good living. So it's not a sweatshop-type situation, just underpricing American workers.
Well,
but the cost of living is so much lower there that that's,
well, that's
a good salary.
You remember what Ross Perot said, you know?
Yep, the giant sucking sound.
Well, anyway, there's another bit of good news,
go ahead,
which listeners should know about. Rising auto stocks lead the Dow surge. Isn't that amazing, all the bad news we've been hearing? Listen to this. Auto stocks and other assets surged in value Tuesday when oil tumbled and the Federal Reserve left interest rates unchanged. On a day when the Dow Industrial soared to 331.62 or 3.8% to 11,600 plus, auto stocks did even better. Shares of General Motors and Ford Motor Company each gained 5.8%. Goodyear Tire and Rubber shares rose $2.30. That's really interesting news. You know, Ford's been down to around $4, General Motors at $11. Perhaps this is the kind of thing we should be shouting Hosanna from.
Well, especially if you're invested in U.S. automakers. I think the issue...
Which we are around here somehow.
I think it is. It's the overview issue is the important one. On a day-to-day or even a week-to-week basis, there can be issues that will bring the stock up, but then a couple days later, it'll bring it back down. In other words, the price of oil from day to day, I think it is daily prices of oil, that will affect the price, of course, of the car stocks. And then, you know, all of a sudden, GM will state how much they're losing money. A quarterly report will come out or whatever, or sales figure for the month. And so there is a lot of volatility, I think, in the price of auto shares. You know, what would you imagine would happen after last week's announcement that Ford was going to lay off a couple thousand more workers, this time white collar? Well, you could take it two ways. One, you could guess that, oh, they're going to cut costs, so they'll make them more profitable, so
that's
the
fair
share value should go up. Or, they're not selling as many cars, they have to lay off people. That continued decline in popularity of Ford vehicles. I mean, this is one
more houses
that
for
would
sale
bring,
in my neighborhood.
Right. Well, that will bring the price of Ford shares down. So it's, you know, whichever opinion happens to sway the figures from day to day, I think you have to look at it at the bigger picture. Until I see Ford or GM or Chrysler, for that matter, having any significant alternative vehicles, I don't invest in stocks for this reason because it's so volatile. But except as mutual funds, which sort of balance out the picture.
Right.
I don't think I would put my money in any of the U.S. auto manufacturers right now until they get these alternative fuel vehicles on the road, which means that they have some hope for success to compete in the future.
Well, you know what somebody told me once, watch what Mr. Kerkorian does. Whatever he does, follow him. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he has been investing in automobile shares for a while. So
yes, you know. He tried all three. Now yes. he was buying Ford stock at $8.50 offering it not too long ago when it was a deal.
It's a great lower price. That's true.
Okay. In any event, economic news is the lifeblood of everything. And if there's something cheery to report, it's better than hearing it go the other way.
There's three cheery reports. Here's partly one that's on the front page of the Press and Guide from Wednesday, August 6th here. Fairlane Town Center, their new restaurant wing is filling up. Okay, they wanted to have somewhat classy and more than just fast food restaurants over at Fairlane that could be accessible also from the parking lot. In fact, maybe only from the parking lot, from inside.
It is now. It's always been. You could access it from the shopping center.
Well, they did close one sort of, I'd say, quality Italian restaurant that was next to the movie theaters, and it's now, it's been a burger place.
Oh, I'm thinking of the other end where all this, the food court.
The food court, but you can walk through the building to get into the food court from inside, too.
Right. And you can get it to it from the outside.
Whereas these classy restaurants will not be. They're part of the building, but they're walled off from the people inside the center.
Fuddruckers is walled
That's
off.
Exactly right. Fuddruckers is the one I was mentioning.
It was a Chinese restaurant,
it was
too?
Italian. No, it was a fancy Italian restaurant where they sang to you. Yeah, they sang operatic, light opera, if you went in there, at least at dinner time. Oh, I loved it. It was great. I can't remember its name, but yeah, finally, it was too expensive, I guess, by itself, and sort of buried there next to the movie theater. Mm. Okay. Well, here's what's happening, and this is a place that I go to on vacation and sometimes drive out to here in Michigan. It's one of their restaurants was announced a couple of years ago, P.F. Chang's.
Oh, wonderful.
Bistro, and I really like their food. I don't normally like franchise food, but I eat at their restaurants whenever I get a chance to. Austin, Texas has one downtown where I go to, and sometimes I drive out to, they have one in Novi.
Novi, is it Novi?
Yeah, one in
or
Troy, too.
No,
there's two of them here. And one is sort of northwest, and one is more north. But anyway, P.F. Chang is going to go in.
Where Saks used to be, as I understand.
Right. And the second one they've announced is Bravo. It's Bravo Cucina Italiana. So it's going to be an Italian restaurant. That nickname is Bravo. And so that's been identified.
Is P.F. Chang open now or still
no,
not?
No, they're both expected. They're supposed to open at the end of summer, and now they're saying November. Before the Christmas shopping season. I don't know how that...
Because that's old news about P.F. Chang.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, and I don't know why it's necessarily taking more space. But they have number two, but they have a place for a third one, and that is... they don't say what it is, so they haven't found it yet. But they've been waiting a long time to even have the second one. Otherwise, the concept sort of falls flat if they don't have all three of these areas filled. They now at least have two-thirds of it filled with the announcement of Bravo Cucina Italiana.
I
would assume the third one will find...
Did they tear down the Saks store?
Yeah,
I think they did.
Well, they walled
off.
Last
time I went there, it looked so different.
Was it Lord & Taylor's? They have walled both of those off. I think it's the Saks wing
that
they've converted. Yes, they have walled it off on the inside.
I don't know if they're using the existing building or they tore them down.
Well, they're using the outside structure, yeah, but they're adding to it and they're totally changing the inside two levels to fit the these restaurants. And they're going to have another a retailer there in Fairlane. It's called Heritage 1981, but it's only for moderate price clothing and accessories. And
the bad news was when Saks
not
changed,
a classy place.
And when Lord and Taylor changed.
Right. Yep.
That's an indication that we're in a transition here.
Well, I wanted to stay with pretty much good news, although we have very sad news to finish the show with. We have about 8 minutes to go here before Blues with Joanne Korchinska. That's right, Highway 61. Start the cruise today down Highway 61 at 2 p.m. as this show ends. First of all, it's the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College this year, 2008. First began in 1938, and it is always been part of the Dearborn city limits district. And so
Dearborn Junior College then, right? Or wasn't it?
Yeah, and for about the first 10 or 15 years, it was called Dearborn Junior College and housed in the Fortson High School as a night school sort of program initially. And then
it went to the Miller Elementary School off of Michigan Avenue.
And we kept classes there even after 1961, when this main campus on Evergreen Road really added a ton of buildings right here in 1961, yeah. And the Miller campus continued for at least another 15 years after that.
I never came to school here. I went to on the Miller campus.
Well, there you go.
I didn't know that it was finished in 61.
61 was when this campus started, I know, because the WHFC Broadcasting Guild, which was the student activity, and they called it WHFC because they didn't know those call letters were taken, that was the student club that wanted to get a broadcast radio station, which is why we're on the air now, is because that club kept at it and kept proving that they knew how to do it.
And everybody doesn't have one.
No.
We have a sophisticated setup.
Happy anniversary to Henry Ford Community College. There are going to be a number of activities through the year, but really, we always have these activities. They're always great. But nonetheless, the first one that they're including in this is the Pulitzer Prize-winning play called The Time of Your Life. Now, for those that don't study plays of the 20th century America, you may not have heard of the name of William Saroyan, but a very famous, of course, Ned is a college graduate, but William Saroyan wrote this play, and it's...
1930s, late 30s, I believe.
Right, it came out in 1939. Here's a brief description, folks, because it's going to start here. This is a three-act, big-time play, and seats will be on the stage, so it's very intimate presentation. Sort of theater in the round, almost, the way it works out. It's at our Adrey Auditorium here at Henry Ford Community College main campus. Starts next Thursday, August 14th, and it's going to be Thursday through Sunday, but Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m., and both Sundays it'll be at 2 p.m. And here's the story, by the way. It's a comedy and a drama, because tragic comedy, comma tragedy, did begin about that time. So about World War II, it changed the playwrights, and we started getting these plays that were happy and sad together. Sort of nature of life, in fact, isn't it? But it's interesting that there was no such thing as comedy and tragedy mixed together in plays before World War II
or
after World War II.
Where do you get your tickets? At the door? Just show up at 8 p.m.?
That's fine. They give it a phone number here. But here's the plot, and it sounds to me like the other famous playwright of the same period was Eugene O'Neill, American playwright. Mm-hmm. This sounds like one of his plays, but it isn't. It's this play, The Time of Your Life, is set in a bar in San Francisco in 1939. It examines the lives of the patrons who are struggling with their destiny in an ever-changing and dangerous world. Well, that could be today, too, isn't it? Full of touching insight, rich comic moments, and unusual characters, it blends poignancy and purpose. I had to look that up again.
What's the price?
It's $7, $5, $7 a seat, $5 for students with ID. All audience seating is on stage, so all the seats are really good. If you want further information or reservations, you can call the HFCC Theater hotline at 313-845-9817. 313-845-9817. Great thing to do with the kids at the end of summer. It's for all audiences, although it is an adult play. I probably don't want to take small babies in there.
But that's a classic.
A classic, yes.
A classic American.
I actually had a chance to read it since I was an English major in college before I became a telecom major. And it really, William Saroyan's plays are beautifully written, very accessible, and poignant. So look that one up. It's POIGNANCY.
What's his other famous book? Name is Aram.
I'm going to rewrite this for our other DJs here. We're, all volunteers here except for myself and a couple of others. And we're afraid that maybe someone will accidentally pronounce the word poignancy as
pregnancy.
Poignancy. Poignancy. Or pregnancy, even if you look twice at it. Yeah, so it's... And
it's one of those French words that the English language has swallowed
adopted.
Up.
Yeah, yeah. It's obviously sensitive, human, but somewhat tragic too, and a great dramatic evening of play experience that you just can't get anywhere else. Can't get it on your TV set, folks. You have to come out and do this live. So Henry Ford Community College Theater, The Time of Your Life, starting next weekend, not this weekend, next weekend, August 14th on Thursday. Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. for the next two weekends, not this weekend. Okay, and it's about 3 minutes remaining. Just mention it briefly, a free festival in the park tomorrow, Saturday, August 10th, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Ford Field in Dearborn. That's Michigan and Brady Streets, between Michigan and Brady, in the North Shelter. So even if it's raining, that's the pavilion that was used for the Italian tent or the Italian pavilion for homecoming, from 11 to 6. Yoga for peace. There's going to be beginner's yoga class taught from 11 to 11:30. Schedules in the paper. Some yoga teachers, devotional meditation, world peace meditation at 2:30. They have some Buddha teachers there. And you'll find out about vegetarian and raw food from Detroit Evolution and various vendors supporting peace and health, too. And free massages all day long. Oh, boy. Wow. From Irene's Myomassology. That's the name of them. So interesting to check out. I hope everybody's in favor of peace. If we ever get there, it'd be wonderful. A sad note, finally, that Ned gave me that I missed. And was this? You think this was in a Dearborn paper, or
actually, I got it today from the Heritage office when I went to pick up my paper.
Okay. So well, I'm not sure that I saw it at the back of the Times Herald this week.
If we're talking about Sunday, yeah, it would have been in their Sunday.
But it looks like August 6th, and that's this Wednesday. Age 81, Anna M. Bewick died, survived by her loving husband, Frank, and we feature Frank Bewick's
column
all
the time.
All the time, because he's the editor, publisher, emeritus of the Times Herald in Dearborn. Beloved mother of Michael, Laurie, Scott, and the late Mark. Proud grandmother of Dr. Janice Bewick, Dr. Carrie Bewick, and Sean Bewick. What we know here is that service will be at McFarland Foss, it says, funeral home
on Schaefer.
Schaefer Road in Dearborn, Sunday, 1:30 p.m. So my guess is
This Sunday
at 1:30. If you wanted to pay respects to Frank Bewick's wife, and of course a significant factor in the entire operation of the Bewick newspaper, sort of a family affair over there, and we're very sad for them and feel very sorry that she did pass away on August the 6th. So Anna M. Bewick, our condolences to the Bewick family.
Especially to Frank, who was a resource for us.
Well, a key spokesperson and information purveyor for the city of Dearborn. And of course, his two sons that helped to run that. Okay, well, it's time now for the new edition of Highway 61 Cruise with Joanne Korchinska. And so as soon as I find the opening here, we are going to get her show on the road. Thank you for listening to WHFR Dearborn, WHFR from Henry Ford Community College.
See you next week.
Absolutely. So goodbye for now for the new WHFR Journal.